Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have back with us Andrew Carrillo, who's the president and founder of Barnett Capital Advisors, and we'll be discussing asset allocation in retirement portfolios. Andrew, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, so I know this is just a nice quick conversation, probably 2 or 3 minutes of asset allocation, right? No, this is quite the broad topic, and I know it could be 2 or 3 days worth of content. So we just want to hit the highlights. What are some of the things that people should keep in mind just from a 30,000 foot view, get us started on asset allocation?
Yeah, you know, studies show that over 90% of your returns are going to be based on your asset allocation. So it is one of the most important aspects, you know, that are going to determine your long-term returns. And I think a couple things that investors need to realize today is, you know, when we have inflation at some of the highest rates of return that we've seen, we have interest rates moving up, but they're still relatively low. And I do think that impacts how investors should allocate their assets and should look at things. One, keeping pace with inflation is important. So obviously having too much money too conservative over time is going to be detrimental to reaching their goals. But I think investors need to stay within their risk tolerance. And sometimes people, what they do is they chase returns. They look in the rearview mirror and they see, you know, an asset class or a sector doing very, very well. And they sort of put an overweight position on that. And even some advisors do that as well. They sort of chase returns. And that's what we're seeing a lot in the tech sector nowadays is, you know, technology is down over, you know, 30% this year. And you know, valuations just got a lot of very, very stretched. But you know, value investments are really holding their own. So I do think people need to maintain diversification and choose an asset allocation that makes sense on your risk tolerance, not necessarily your friends or someone you talk to or even your advisor's risk tolerance. You need to be comfortable with what you're doing.
Or what you see on the internet, because, you know, that's gospel truth right there.
Yeah, so those keyboard warriors out there.
Let's dive in a little bit deeper on the risk and volatility, because that happens minute by minute, hour by hour on the stock market and the Dow Jones and your portfolio, and you'll drive yourself nuts if you try to track everything. You should have the broad overview and just kind of know that what you have set up is good and just kind of watch it. But when you see that volatility happens, you said something really interesting about being overweight in certain things. So you see something and you want to react and go, ooh, this happened, so now I need to do that. Whatever that is, we don't need to talk about, you know, strategies, but it, in my mind, it brought up the word rebounding. Because if you react to something and go, ooh, this happened, so now I need to shift my portfolio to another strategy, well, you might be overweight and have gone too far, and then now you need to rebound and try to reallocate, and it seems like you'd be always chasing your tail trying to catch up, right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, you want to be a little proactive versus reactive.
Yeah,
you know, really have a plan in place for whatever the market, you know, brings at us. You know, people sometimes in retirement are shocked. You know, the market went down, and they sort of as if that wasn't in part of their plan. Right? We have to have a plan for if it goes down. We have to have a plan for if it goes up, and position well. You know, not what happens next year or tomorrow, but what's going to do well over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years to get the returns you need within your risk tolerance.
Yeah. And so you mentioned some time frames, you know, 5 to 15, 20 years. Well, guess what? A lot of people feel like even though they realize, oh, my retirement is in the future on the horizon there, you need to make sure you give it enough time to have these strategies go to work and not be micromanaging them. But talk a little bit about how people, when they see or hear about volatility, how do you weigh that versus just trusting the process?
Yeah, so something interesting is, you know, a lot of people think, you know, the market's having a bad year, and so they think their retirement's affected from that. But it's really when stock prices go down, the long-term returns have not changed. What's happened is returns will be higher now, going forward from these levels on average. So all it does is make you know, the long-term return when you bought has not changed. You're still going to earn, you know, whatever it is, 9-10% on the stocks on average, but returns, you know, from these levels are going to be higher. So for example, you know, in the last 10 years, returns were above average. Now we have, you know, now they went below average. And now that they're below average, well, you know, what's next is above average.
Yeah.
And so studies show that over the last 100 years, when stocks are high, returns are actually lower. And when stocks are low, returns are higher. And so by understanding that, that can help investors make better decisions, because so many people, you know, think like, oh, I'm stop the bleeding. And they think like they look at the market every day and they feel those losses. But if they understood that over time, nothing has changed, right? Earnings actually, majority have not been affected in most companies, but the prices are just lower. So it's the equivalent of a, you know, a piece of real estate that you like. If you can still rent it the same, but now it's lower, right? You're just getting a higher yield on your money going forward. So I think, you know, understanding that these are real businesses and they're really a long-term stream of cash flows is what determines their return. Warren Buffett has a famous quote, you know, in the short term, the market is a voting machine, and you might not like the way people vote. They vote very sporadic. But in the long term, it's a weighing machine.
Yeah. And
what it's really doing is weighing all the profits of the businesses and what they do with those profits. And it's the same thing with, you know, anyone's net worth over the next 30 years is it's going to be how much money you made and what you did with that money.
Yep.
And the same thing with the businesses over time. They're very correlated with, you know, their long-term earnings.
You know, and you were mentioning just in that explanation, you know, when this goes up, and I know that there's like the seesaw effect with many factors, but you mentioned also inflation, and we don't need to get into a masterclass on what inflation does, but I do realize that when inflation is high, then it impacts the market sometimes in good ways in some sectors, sometimes in bad ways. And then when they try to level off inflation, then to do that, that pushes the, you know, seesaw back down in another area, and it's like the people that were initially upset, now they're happier because, you know, they're trying to fix inflation. But then the other sector, the other side of the market is like, hey, wait a minute. So talk a little bit about why inflation does that seesaw effect.
Yeah, so inflation is caused by the government's increase in the money supply. You know, the government typically will want to point at other things. That's very common throughout history. But at the end of the day, if you create more dollars, each dollar is less special. That's supply versus demand. And so what happens is they've kept rates too low for too long. And what that does is when they have rates low, it brings up asset prices. It makes real estate more affordable, right? On a 3%, you can afford a lot more house than at a 6% interest rate. But the other way, you know, as they're sucking up some of the money they printed and they raise interest rates, people start seeing, okay, maybe I can earn 3 or 4% in cash and I might not take as risk. And so valuations in the stock market get compressed. And that's what we're seeing here. But I do think, you know, inflation does have a history of getting out of control. And so that's why it's important that the Fed, you know, they probably should have done this a few years ago, it's important that they act and do get the inflation under control, because confidence in a currency is very important historically. Because without confidence, it has no value, and it's not confidence in the ability of the government, or it's really in the confidence in the currency's ability to hold its value. And if that confidence is lost, it can go to its intrinsic value very, very quick. So that's what we're seeing recently. And I think that's important for investors too, because, you know, taking a look at how much of your assets are in confidence assets or how much of your assets are in real assets that get their value, you know, from the businesses that they're in, or do they get their value, you know, from a dollar that may not be worth as much in the future. And I think having a balance there is the key to making sure we're truly diversified and going to get the returns you need to survive, you know, whatever level of inflation we have in the future.
Yeah. You know, Andrew, you mentioned confidence, and that word made me think of the word sentiment, because I know in the markets, many times if you start losing confidence, the sentiment in the market is changed, and it starts to plummet, and it has nothing to do with the, you know, track record of this sector or this class or this stock or this whatever. And it doesn't matter. It's like, no, look, this is a good investment, because it doesn't matter if the sentiment is shifting. So I think what you say about that inflation, aspect, without even having to get into the weeds, it really does. There's a big factor in that confidence and sentiment, and it just, that's what many times it drives the market without even being able to point to charts or you know, track record.
Yes, correct. Yeah, and confident. Yeah, and that type of, if that were to happen with a currency, it could be, you know, very devastating. So that's why they're acting very tough. They're raising interest rates. You know, that is having some nervousness in the market. But for the long term, it is very positive for retirees, for people planning for retirement, because we do need, you know, stable currency over time, you know, to operate.
So yep.
Inflation is typically never a good thing. You know, and it does have a history of getting out of control, and it's a sign, you know, typically in poor countries that have rapid inflation, it destroys the middle class.
So we've been talking about, you know, broad factors, and now let's kind of zero in on asset allocation. And again, not to get into specific strategy or whatnot, but what's a good starting point? You know, like when you think about, you know, hey, we should, you know, allocate your investment assets for retirement in this type of way, like 70% to stocks or 30% to this. What is the initial approach that you take, and what are some factors that people need to consider, like their age and how much time before retirement? Because wouldn't that affect, you know, percentages and what asset classes should people consider?
Yeah, so I think people should start with a retirement income analysis, understand what their needs are. That can help you, you know, backtrack into what type of returns do you need. And then that can, you know, along with your risk tolerance, you know, so for example, if you're very, very conservative and you realize, you know, you need a 7% rate of return, well, maybe you're going to realize you have to take on a little more risk to get that return. And the other way around, if you, you know, are very aggressive and then you realize, hey, you know, I only need a 3% rate of return, maybe you're going to say, you know what, I'd rather sleep a little better at night. I'll tape, you know, taper back the risk to more of a moderate approach. So understanding that return is the key. But then taking a look at, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, sometimes people get nervous about the market. Everyone's always trying to scare them about the stock market. And, you know, some of the biggest investors in the stock market are pension funds. Huh. And I think it's interesting to study the way these endowments and pension funds invest, because they have very, very similar goals and objectives to retirees. Right? Yes. Retirees, yeah, they need the return, and they need to be able to provide an income stream to their pensioners for the rest of their life. So sometimes people think, oh, no, they're just paying out cash. No, these guys are invested in the stock market. They're invested in alternative assets, things that are more stable, maybe earn a higher rate of return than cash. And then, you know, and bonds, things that are more, you know, more conservative than bonds or similar conservativeness, but a higher return than bonds. And so I think it's interesting to look at that. And I think alternatives can play an important role in this market, to help improve the risk-adjusted returns of a portfolio and combine that with the stock market portion.
Yeah.
But having a good balance between value strategies, quality value strategies, because I feel like there's not that many good value strategies out there, and then also having some growth assets. And sometimes people think, you know, the word growth means it outperforms value. But historically, in the last 100 years, value strategies have actually outperformed growth. But it's just because people hear the word growth, they think it outperforms. But also, you know, buying businesses at reasonable prices is important to long-term, you know, returns. And sometimes, you know, just because a company's growing doesn't mean it makes sense to pay 100 times sales for a company that doesn't make any money. So I do think we're seeing a lot of that in the market. People got a little too momentum chasing and greedy and didn't look at the numbers of these businesses. And we're starting to see that as interest rates go up, people are paying a little more attention to that.
Now, I know you mentioned bonds, and without getting into, you know, a deep dive on bonds, are there times where bonds are better investments than other times? Like in an inflationary market, is it good to be in bonds, or should you wait a while? Because I know stocks, that's kind of like a pretty, you know, tried and true class, same as bonds, but I know that there's times of the year that it's better to be in bonds or not.
Yeah, well bonds, especially, it depends on the maturity. Right now, the shorter term bonds, you know, 6 months, a year, are pretty attractive. You can get 3-4% with very little risk. And even right now, a 30-year bond, lending money to the U.S. government for 30 years, is paying 4%, but you can get that pretty much on a 6 month to a one, the same yield. Now, the risk with a long term bond is if interest rates rise, which, you know, you can basically, long term bonds will go down around 20% for every 1% increase in interest rates. And so that's something You know, that's pretty risky, even though, yes, you are guaranteed your principal over 30 years. 30 years, you will get your money back. But in the meantime, you could see that capital fluctuate, you know, quite a bit if interest rates even just go to 6.
Yeah.
So that's really the key. And now the other way around, if interest rates were to go down, those long-term bonds fly. And that's what typically happens in a recession. So they're not, you know, long-term bonds can be attractive, definitely to hedge the portfolio. During COVID, they really shot up. During 2008 recession, during dot-com bubble, long-term bonds were a very, very good diversifier in a portfolio, because the Fed, you know, they're almost like a, they pretty much have one trick up their sleeve. They say they have a lot of tools, but they either print money or they suck money back in. And a lot of times when we hit recession, they will stop raising rates and they will start cutting interest rates. And that's usually to offset a decline in real estate, offset a decline in the other, you know, in the stock market. And so those long-term bonds can be attractive, but they're not having a fun time right now. But eventually, you know, that tide will change. And so that's really, you know, it all depends on the maturity of the bonds, and what's happening with interest rates, depending on what's happening in the economy and sure. inflation.
Well, also there's the other aspect of asset allocation, which is the old fashioned cash, right? So there should always be, probably, in my opinion, some percentage that you go, okay, we need to keep a certain percent, 10% or whatever the percentage is, just sitting in the sidelines, just completely liquid and completely risk-free. So what is your position on keeping cash as part of your asset allocation?
Yes, I think having a good amount of cash is important. You know, everyone's risk tolerance can be different, and I think it gives you peace of mind. I think it also helps you be more successful with your investment assets, because you're not, you know, if something comes up, you can have to go to your portfolio. You're not getting as nervous about the volatility. You can say, look, I got this $50,000, $100,000 in cash. You know, that's just sitting there and earning some interest, but at least it's my safety net. And I think people are more successful. If you have no cash or very little cash below what you really feel like you should, you're going to be, I think, not as good of an investor in the market.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, like I said at the beginning of our talk, at the phrase asset allocation is quite the broad category and conversation. So we hit on so many of these key points to keep in mind, that then when you can drill in and go, okay, now what should my percentages be? Well, it's based on risk. It's based on your age. It's based on, you know, your retirement goals. All of that needs to be done with someone like yourself to sit down with and say, okay, now let's look at your situation. So what I would wonder is, if someone is listening to this thinking, okay, those points made sense, how would it look for me? What's the best way people can learn more and then reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, people can schedule a complimentary meeting with me on my website or call me at 305-328-8538. And I really think in a lot of places, you know, they're doing very traditional asset allocation. I think the world that we're in today with the inflation, it requires, you know, some more thinking about alternative assets, some thinking about the defensive parts in the portfolio, and it's an adaptation to the times that we're in. And so people can either email me or on my website or call me.
Yes. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure having you back on.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Anytime.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.